Thank you for listening to the Oasis Church podcast. To find out more about Oasis, including service times and directions, please visit our website at oasisla.org.
I want to preach from the book of Matthew chapter 14. If you brought your Bibles with you, you could turn to Matthew chapter 14, verse 22. You know, if you brought your iPad, iPhone, whatever device, go ahead and pull that out. If not, we're going to have it on the screen for you as well. If you're really saved, I know you brought your genuine leather Bible, but if not, it's okay. It's okay. We'll get there. And in Matthew chapter 14, verse 22 through 33, it says, "Immediately after this, Jesus insisted that his disciples get back into the boat and cross to the other side of the lake. While he sent the people home, Jesus insisted that his disciples get back in the boat and cross to the other side of the lake while he sent the people home. The people he's referring to is the 5,000 families that they just got finished feeding. And after sending them home, he went up to the hills by himself to pray. Night fell while he was there alone. Meanwhile, the disciples were in trouble far away from land, for a strong wind had risen and they were fighting heavy waves. About 3 o'clock in the morning, Jesus came toward them, walking on the water. When the disciples saw him on the water, they were terrified. In their fear, they cried out, 'It's a ghost!' But Jesus spoke to them at once. 'Don't be afraid,' he said. 'Take courage. I am here.' Then Peter called to him, 'Lord, if it's really you, tell me to come to you, walking on the water.' 'Yes, come,' Jesus said. So Peter went over the side of the boat and walked on water toward Jesus. But when he saw the strong wind and the waves, he was terrified and began to sink. 'Save me, Lord,' he shouted. Jesus immediately reached out and grabbed him. 'You have so little faith,' Jesus said. 'Why did you doubt me?' When they climbed back into the boat together, the wind stopped. Then the disciples worshiped him, saying, 'You really are the Son of God.'" One of the hardest things for us to do is trust God, is have faith in God. Especially when we're encountering a storm. But I find comfort in knowing that the very people who walked with Jesus, who talked with Jesus, who saw the very miracles firsthand, who saw him raise Lazarus from the dead, saw him feed 5,000 families with just a couple fish and a few loaves of bread, they still struggled with their faith too. If you're going through a situation right now that requires faith, but for one reason or another, you just can't seem to find it, let me encourage you that you're not alone. It's human nature to struggle with our faith. But my hope is that today God would strengthen us. He would encourage us in our faith. Let's pray together before we get started. Father God, thank you for your word. Thank you for your word which brings life, which brings truth. Thank you that we can count on your word in our life, God. My prayer today, God, is that you would reveal yourself to us, that we would begin to see truly who Jesus is. Not this interpretation or this representation of the past, God, but we would begin to see Jesus alive and at work in our hearts and our lives today, God. In Jesus' name, amen. Amen. There was a survey done by a pastor named Tony Campolo. And I really like this guy. I really respect him. He is an incredible author, an incredible speaker. And he did this survey with over 1,000 people that were in their 80s and 90s. Now, how many know we can learn something from somebody in their 80s and 90s? They have lived a lot. They have grandkids, great-grandkids. They have had successes, failures. They have seen it all. And the response was overwhelmingly similar among these 1,000 people. The top three answers amongst these people were in this order. Number one, take more risks. If I could do it all over again, I would take more risks. Number two, I would reflect more. And number three, I would do more things that leave a legacy. Do more things that live beyond just myself. And I want to talk today about that first answer that they gave. Take more risks. It's interesting that people in their 80s and 90s wouldn't say, "I wish I would have saved more. I wish I would have played it safe. I wish I would have been more conservative with my investments or whatnot." They said, "No, I wish I would have taken more risks." And I want to talk and see what that means to us. You see, I'm a strong believer that the life that God has planned for us will involve big risks. And these big risks will require us to have big leaps of faith, to trust God even when we don't know exactly where we're going or what is going on around us. I know I'm a young man, and I still have a lot of life to live, and I'm still learning a lot. But in my short life, every great success that I have had has been on the other side of taking a risk, trusting God that his promises are true in my life. But see, we just finished this great series on life of a giant killer. And we talked about in life, we're going to have to be prepared to kill giants, to fight fights, to endure storms. But not just fighting fights for the sake of fighting fights. Not just killing giants for the sake of killing giants. But I believe that the very plan that God has for us in our life will require us to kill some giants. But we don't need to go and seek these battles out. We don't need to fight insignificant battles. We don't need to create problems that are unnecessary, because we're going to have enough battles and enough problems in our life as we're just simply following God. I just got back from Peru a couple months ago. And I was in Peru. We were visiting some generosity water wells that we had put there. As of now, we've built about 25 wells now in the Amazon jungle in Peru. And this is my first time there, and my experience there was really incredible. And it's so different than my travels throughout Africa, seeing the need for water there. And although the need in Peru is so significant, and people are dying, literally, because they don't have clean water. In fact, they say that the Amazon River itself is one of the most polluted water sources in the world. And it was completely brown. There is trash floating in there. The sewage systems run through this water. More contaminants than any other water source in the world. I couldn't believe that. I thought for sure it must have been in Africa. But the Amazon River is one of the most polluted sources. And the places that we built these wells were not in the cities, not in the capital, but really in the rural village in the jungle. And so in order to get there, we had to fly 14-hour flight or so, 10-hour flight to Lima, and then we get on an hour-and-a-half flight to Iquitos, and then from Iquitos, we took this 45-minute motorcycle taxi ride to where the river is, and then when you get on the river, we get on these little boats that they attached motorcycle engines to the boat to make it go, and you could only fit maybe 8 people in these boats, and they called them peke peke, because peke, that was the sound that the boat made as it went down the river, peke 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 peke. So I have a picture of me and my camera guy in one of these little boats as we're going down the Amazon. And then once we took this hour-long boat ride to get to the village that we had to go to, we'd get off, and it was super swampy, and it's like bugs flying everywhere. I used a whole can of Off every day. If I was stranded on an island, the only thing I could take, I would take Off. That's it. Because at least I know I wouldn't get bug bites. And if you can see the next picture here, we were literally walking over tree branches to try not to get our feet soaking wet. And it was an incredible experience as we went down to these villages. And after this hour walk, you'll see the next photo here. We got to hang out with the kids, and we were, just giving them candy and food, and also celebrating with them now that they had clean water for the first time. It was a pretty surreal experience. But while we were there, our local partners, I was asking them, I was saying, I'm like, okay, so they actually told us, we've built as many wells as we could in the villages that are only an hour and a half away from the city. So we can't really do any more wells here. And I said, well, can we go further down the river? Can we go deeper down? And they said, yeah, we can go. I mean, they're 4 or 5 hours down, but the risk is there's still some villagers in the Amazon that are a little bit crazy. They're a little savages. They call them warrior villages. They just kill people for the sake of killing people. They don't even have any purpose. They're not trying to conquer any more territory or land or expand their ground. They're just simply raised as warriors, and they need to prove how strong they are by killing other people. So they told us that the average lifespan of the people in these warrior villages was 32 years old. Their life was 32 years old because they were fighting battles they were never meant to fight. They were fighting insignificant battles with no purpose and no plan. And they told us this one particular story. I mean, you're talking the tribal villages that you might see in some documentaries or movies. Face paint, I mean, warriors, chiefs. They said one of the ways that they kill people is they behead them, they take their head, they put it in this hot chemical poison, and it shrinks their head. So then they would hang these little heads about this big all along their village just to show how many people they've killed and not to mess with them. But one time, this Christian man from America somehow worked up the courage to go into one of these villages. Now, I'm all about following God, but God, please don't ever send me into these villages. I have trust, I have faith, but I don't want to go there. But this guy, somehow he went, and he goes into this village, and somehow he finds favor with the chief, and the chief starts to trust him and like him. and this guy begins to tell him about Jesus, and he begins to give out Bibles to people, and they were telling us this is extremely rare. I mean, usually this guy would have been dead in an instant, but he goes out there, and he's starting to preach to people and learning the language and becoming friends, and then the official religion of this community became Christianity, and this entire tribe became Christians. This is about 10 years ago. Now, a couple years after that, another group came in, another guy who was an atheist, an agnostic, that believed in no God and no Jesus. Somehow he went to the exact same village, and he went there, and he knew that these guys were starting to preach Jesus. And he went there, he said, no, he goes, guys, these Americans are trying to brainwash you. They're trying to take away your culture. They're trying to take away who you are. You don't need to believe that stuff. You need to go back to what the gods you believed in, the gods you were raised on. And the police chief walked up to this guy and said, sir, this Bible, this Jesus that you're talking about has saved my life and has saved your life. And he looked at him and he said, I don't know about you. It may have saved your life, but it sure as heck hasn't saved my life. And the chief said, no, you don't understand. He said, before Jesus saved my life, as soon as you would have stepped foot on my land, we would have killed you and beheaded you. This Jesus saved your life. The point of this story is that I think the same is true in our life. So many times, especially as guys, we look to fight fights with people. We look to create problems with people. We want to be right more than it even matters. And so we start fighting insignificant battles. We start going places that we should have never gone because that's not where God called us to go anyway. We start fighting with our friends and our family and starting to have these bickers and battles. It's like pick and choose our fights and where we're going. Man, men, don't worry. There's going to be a lot of fights ahead of you. There's going to be a lot of fights that God's calling us to fight. We need to save our energy, save our faith for the ones that he's calling us to go to. I got one more story for you. And this one was about 7 years ago. I was 17 years old. And guys, I know we're in church. Don't hold this story against me. I was 17. This is way before I was saved. Never met Jesus before. I grew up in church my whole life. Still wasn't a Christian. And we did some crazy things. I've already talked to God. I asked for forgiveness. He said he thought about it for a while, but he gave me forgiveness. So just don't judge me. It just makes for a good story. So I got to tell you. So we're a bunch of 17-year-olds. I just got my driver's license. And we were looking for some adrenaline, you know. And when teenagers are looking for adrenaline, that's never a good thing. You know that it's not going to be headed in the right direction. So I round up some of my guy friends, and we decided that we were going to go to 7-Eleven. We were going to buy a 99-cent dozen of eggs, not to eat, not because we're hungry, but because we wanted to go and egg cars that were parked along the street. I don't know why we thought this would be fun, why we thought this would be funny, but for some reason we did. So we're out there, and we would be driving by. We see a little car on the side of the road. We throw an egg out. We're like, high five. We're like, that's amazing. Oh, my gosh. And then sooner or later, that became not enough. So we wanted to start to hit a car that was actually driving on the road. So there's a car coming along our road, and I'm driving. Of course, I'm the driver. So there's someone behind me in the car. He throws the egg out, hits a car that's coming towards us. And we're like, oh, my gosh, can you believe we just hit this guy? And so then all of a sudden, we're like high-fiving, thinking this is awesome. I look in my rearview mirror. This guy pulled a move straight out of Fast and the Furious. He pulls it. Exactly like that. And he starts chasing us down this road. And I mean, he must have been a getaway driver or something. I mean, he was on our tail the whole time. And so I'm freaking out. We're going down every which road. We're taking back alleys. We're going down residential communities. We're going down streets trying to get away from this guy. And all of a sudden, my friends are telling me, Jordan, don't worry. We got your back, man. Whatever happens, we got you. As if it wasn't their fault too. Like, I got you, man. It's good. All of a sudden, I'm driving down, and I take a left-hand turn, and it's a dead end. And this guy's right on me. So I turn around. My heart is pounding. Adrenaline is flowing. And then he pulls another Fast and the Furious move, and he's like, diagonal park on the road, just to make it harder for me to get out. And we're looking around like, what do we do? What do we do right now? And then all of a sudden, in slow motion, this guy kicks open the car door, and out walks this 6'7", bald-headed man, looked like a combo between William Wallace and a Hell's Angel biker. This guy had more tattoos than Dennis Rodman. He had a goatee that went down to here. He had a leather jacket with spikes all around it, and he had leather boots. And then he started taunting us. He said, "Get out of the car! Get out of the car!" And then my boys look at me and they start whispering. They go, "Jordan, I think he's talking to you, man. I mean, you're driving." So I say, "All right, I got this." So in slow motion, I kick my door open. And I walk out to this man. And I get about 5 feet away from him. And I say, "Giant, you may come against me with a sword and a spear and a javelin, but I come against you with the God of Israel, whom you have defied, sir." You see, that's what I was thinking. How many of you know you can be full of faith but not lack any wisdom? You know what I'm saying? We stayed in that car, and as soon as he got as close as he could to our car, we just took off as fast as we could. And thank God he never followed us after that. And we finally got away. Man, what is the point of that story? The point of that story is sometimes we can create giants in our life because of stupid decisions that we make. Sometimes we can be wondering why we have these sickness all the time, or why we're overweight, and the problem is we're just eating unhealthy, or we're looking at our life and we're saying, "Why am I in so much debt?" And it's maybe because we haven't ever put a budget together and learned how to live on that budget. Some giants are not God's fault. They're just simply our fault for not doing the right thing, for not doing what God's called us to do. However, the good news is, even if we are the problem and the very cause of our storm, even if we are the problem for the giant that we have to face, the grace of God will still get us through it. God's grace is still sufficient for you. Even if it was your problem, your weakness, your decision, he still loves you, he's still got your back, and he'll still help you get away from the giant. As we go back into the Bible here in Matthew chapter 14, verse 22, it says, immediately after this, Jesus insisted that his disciples get back into the boat and cross to the other side of the lake while he sent the people home. After sending them home, he went up into the hills by himself to pray. Night fell while he was there alone. Meanwhile, the disciples were in trouble far away from land, for a strong wind had risen and they were fighting heavy waves. About 3 o'clock in the morning, Jesus came toward them walking on the water. What I love about this story is we see the disciples in the middle of a storm, in the middle of trouble and problems. They are freaking out. They are scared. They are anxious. They are nervous. They don't know exactly what to do. One thing after the next is colliding on them, and they are confused. But I have good news for you, friends. Even in your darkest day, even in the moment where you're not sure what to do, when you can't go to God, he will still come to you. Our God is faithful. Our God is faithful. He will never leave us nor forsake us. It doesn't matter how insurmountable the odds may seem to you. It doesn't matter how far in debt you are. It doesn't matter how sick you think you are. Our God will come to you. You see, Jesus starts walking to his boys. They're horrified. When the disciples saw him walking on the water, they were even more terrified. And in their fear, they cried out, "It's a ghost!" We have Jesus walking over to his boys. And of course, those of us who grew up in church know that Jesus had blonde hair and blue eyes, and he had a white robe and a blue sash. It's funny. I mean, we have a Middle Eastern Jesus, but funny enough, he looks Norwegian. I don't know. So we have Jesus with his hair blowing out saying, "Take courage, it's me." But Jesus spoke to them at once. He said, "Don't be afraid." He said, "Take courage, I am here." Another translation simply just says, "Take courage, I am." If I were in the boat, I would say, "You are what?" "I am." What's that? It's interesting that Jesus refers to himself as I am. Remember the story of Moses in the book of Exodus 3? where he's having a bit of an identity crisis, and he's supposed to go to Pharaoh and free the Israelites, but he's frustrated and confused, and he's afraid that the millions of Israelites won't listen to him. In Exodus chapter 3, verse 13, Moses says to God, "Suppose I go to the Israelites and say to them, 'The God of your father has sent me to you.' And then they ask me, 'Well, what is his name? What should I tell them?'" And in verse 14, God says to Moses, "I am who I am. This is what you are to say to the Israelites. I am has sent me to you." First of all, you know you're God when you can just say, "I am who I am." You, okay. So now just imagine for a moment this situation. Moses is in front of millions of Israelites. They're discouraged. They're frustrated. They're fighting each other. They're not sure where to go. And they go, "Who are you? Who sent you to us?" "I am sent me." "Who?" "I am sent me." That doesn't even make sense. That's not even English. What is God trying to say to us when he reveals himself as the great I am? He is telling us that the very answer to our problem is him. No matter how big you think it is, no matter how insurmountable it might seem, no matter how sick you are, no matter the relationship problem, the abuse, the heartbreak, the betrayal, the lies about you, no matter how big you think your problem may be, he is whatever you need him to be when you need him most. "God, I need healing in my body." "I am." "God, I need a job." "I am." "I need peace in my heart." "God, I am." "I need direction." "God, I'm lost and confused." "I am." I need forgiveness." "God, I am." "I am everything you need." This is Jesus revealing himself to us. The key to trusting God more is seeing who Jesus really is. John 6:51 says, "I am the living bread." John 8, "I am the light of the world." John 8:23, "I am from above." John 8:58, "Before Abraham was, I am." John 10:9, "I am the door." John 10:11, "I am the good shepherd." John 10:36, "I am the son of the living God." John 11:25, "I am the resurrection and the life." John 14:6, "I am the way, the truth, and the life." He is the great I am. No matter our situation, if we just apply the great I am, I believe we will find peace. How dare our situation try and determine and dictate our level of faith? "Don't be afraid," he said, "I am." Amidst the wind and the waves and uncertainty, I am going to have peace because you are an awesome God, because you are the Prince of Peace. In Matthew chapter 14 and 28, it says, Peter then called to him, "Lord, if it's really you, tell me to come to you, walking on the water." "Yes, come," Jesus says. I love Peter right here because I don't blame him. He sees Jesus performing a miracle, walking on the water, and Peter says, "I want to walk on water too. That's amazing. Look at this Jesus. I want to walk on the water too." You see, but I don't blame him. But notice Jesus' words. He doesn't say to Peter, "Come and walk on the water with me, Peter." No, he just simply says, "Come. Come to me." You know why? It's because Jesus never for a second even considered the water. I believe that Jesus looked from a distance and saw that his boys were in trouble, that they were having a problem. The wind and the waves were crashing on the boat. And out of compassion for his boys, he walked towards them and water just happened to be in his way. So Peter is caught up with the miracle that Jesus is doing. But it was never about the water. Jesus says to Peter, "Come to me. Come to me, Peter." See, Jesus has always said to people, "Come to me." In Matthew 11:28, "Come to me, all you who are weary and burdened, and I will give you rest." But Peter is pumped, right? Because he gets to walk on the water with Jesus. We know that this is true because as long as Peter kept his focus on Jesus, as long as he kept his focus on going to God, he walked on water. But the moment he started to get caught up in what he was doing and started to notice the problems around him and the waves that were crashing in and the wind that was blowing against him, he started to sink. Don't you know what faith is? It's just going to God in every situation, in every circumstance, even when the wind and the waves are crashing against us and we don't know exactly what we're doing or where we're going. It's just simply going to God. You know, this past Monday, we had our top givers dinner here at the church, and it was just to thank people for all that they've done, all they've given, all they've served, and everything they've done, and kind of cast vision for next year. And while we're at this dinner, Michelle is showing everybody at the dinner table this little video of her son Finn walking for the first time. And it's amazing because when you see the mom's face and how they get the kid to finally walk for the first time, you see, they set up the little kid and they put him about 12 inches away. They're like, all right, come to mommy. Come to mommy. And Finn has no idea what he's doing. He's just wobbling there for a second. And finally, he takes one step forward. And then he falls down again. And Michelle has to pick him back up. No, no, no. It's okay. You are awesome. You're amazing. Just come to mom. Come to mom. And before you know it, Finn is taking one step, taking another step, and another step, and another step. And before you know it, he's walked all the way across the living room. But you know, if you ask Finn, he didn't even know he walked across the living room. He was just going to mom. I believe that's exactly what faith is. Every step of the way, we're just going to God. When he says to come, we just go. We may not know the next step. We may not even know where we're going. We're just going to God. We may even fall down along the way. And God does exactly that. Picks us back up. It's okay. You're awesome. You're amazing. You can do it. It's not over. Come to Dad. Come to Dad. And after a while, as we continue to just follow God, just come to God, we won't even be able to calculate. We won't even be able to strategize. We won't even be able to know exactly where we're going because it's never been about the water. We're just following God. Before you know it, people will start to look at your life 30 years from now and say, my God, how did you do it? That's a miracle. That healing in your body, you just won the Oscar. There are millions of dollars in your business. That worship song you wrote is now being sung all around the world. But your testimony will be very different. I don't know about all that. I just kept going to God. In every situation, in every circumstance, despite my surroundings, despite the conflict and the worry, I just kept going to God. When I look at my life, every great success that I've ever had has been a direct result of just simply going to God. When we started Generosity Water 3 years ago, we never knew where we'd be today. We had a little idea to give people clean water around the world. 3 years later, close to $2 million have been raised. 300 wells around the world have been built. 110,000 people have access to clean water still today and forever. This last Tuesday, we had the opportunity to go and meet Katy Perry and take these pictures with her for the press because she just raised over $50,000 for Generosity Water on her tour. Jordan, how did you do it? I don't know. I didn't have a strategy or a plan. I just kept going to God. When he said go, I just kept going. And there's been times where I've had to fall down and I've had to screw up and mess up. But I just got to get back up again and just keep going to God when he says go. It's not always going to be a clear water. It's not always going to be safe, but we just got to keep going. And when I look at next year, 2012, I don't fully know where we're headed as an organization and the things that we're going to do, but I just know that when he says go, we're going to go. We may get knocked down, but we're going to get back up again. We're just going to keep going and fulfilling the plan that God has for our life. Pastor Philip, how did you do it? You got a church of people in their 20s and 30s, but yet you raised millions of dollars and bought a building that would hold thousands of people. How did you do it? You gave millions of dollars year after year after year to the homeless in our city and the people around the world. How is that possible? I don't know. But when God just says to go, we just go. We don't look around. We don't focus on the objects around us. That's what faith is, just going to God in every circumstance, in every situation. And I love the next part of this story in the Bible because this is where we see the very grace of God at work. And I don't know about you, but I'm not perfect. I have some good days, and I also have some bad days. There have been times in my life where I have so much faith and I feel like I can do anything in the world, but then there's also times when I'll start to lose my sight of God and I'll start to focus on the difficulties and the problems and the things that are going on in my life, and I start to sink and I start to feel like I can't get back up. One moment things can seem so perfect and the next can be so worried. Verse 29 says, Peter was in the middle of a miracle. He was actually walking on the water toward Jesus. As long as he was occupied with Jesus, he performs a miracle. But when he begins to focus on the problems, he began to sink. But when he saw this, in verse 30, but when he saw the strong wind and the waves, he was terrified and began to sink. Save me, Lord, he shouted. And I love Jesus here because he doesn't try to teach him a lesson while he's sinking. Where do we get this idea of God? It's definitely not in the Bible. Show me chapter and verse where Jesus punishes people as they're sinking. God, you created the pain. You must be teaching me a lesson. No, that's not the Jesus that I know. That's not the Jesus that I see in the Bible. For when Peter is sinking and he cries out, Lord, save me, the Bible says that Jesus immediately reached out his arm and grabbed him. Jesus picks Peter back up once again and allows Peter to feel once again what it's like to walk on water. You may have once had so much faith. You may have once taken a big risk and maybe you failed and you fell down. But let me tell you, it's not too late to get back up again. It's not too late if we just cry out and say, Lord, save me in this situation. Oh, I believe that his arm is extended to you and that he's going to lift you up out of your situation. And once again, you will feel what it's like to walk on the water with Jesus. Faith is the new safe, because either way, you can't lose. When we're occupied with Jesus, we'll do miracles. We'll do incredible things. But even if we start to lose track of where we're going, we start to lose track of Jesus, and we start to sink and start to fall down, he is right there with us to pick us back up, get us back on our feet again, and lead us in the direction where he's called us to go. You can take everything I have. You can take my house, my car, my clothes, my bank accounts. But if I still have faith, I'll be back. Horatio. I want to close with this last story here. There was a man in 1871 by the name of Horatio Spafford. He was a lawyer and a successful businessman. He invested in the Chicago real estate at the time. He was very well known and well respected by the community. People really looked up to this man. He lived in Chicago. He had a wife, he had a son, and four daughters. And one day, this little four-year-old boy passed away so suddenly from scarlet fever, and it crushed him so deeply. Then, right after this, the Great Chicago Fire happened in 1873. Destroyed his business, destroyed the economy, destroyed everything he had worked so hard to build, destroyed his life. So he just lost his four-year-old son, and then Horatio loses his business. So he decides a couple years later that he wants to take a vacation to Europe. He wants to take his whole family just to get away and have some time together. But he's still trying to salvage whatever's left of this business that he might have. And so he sends his wife and his four girls along ahead of him on this ship, sailing to England. And Horatio's there finishing up some zoning issues, trying to salvage some stuff. And while his wife and his girls are in the middle of the ocean on the way to England, their ship collides with another ship. 226 people died that very day, including Horatio's four daughters. But when his wife made it to England, she sent him a telegram that simply said, saved, alone. As you can imagine, Horatio was heartbroken. He was devastated. This is a man who lost literally everything. His business, his son, and now his four daughters. So, as probably Hugh would do, he decides, I'm going to get on the next ship, get to England, and console my wife. So he goes, and as he's sailing on this boat, the captain informs everybody that they were passing over the very location where the previous ship had collided with the other and so many people had passed away. And it was at this moment that Horatio realized that he was passing over the watery grave of his four daughters. But something came over him at that moment. I believe it was the very presence of God. He began to write words on a paper. He began to write poems and lyrics together. It is recorded that at that very moment, on that trip to England, he writes the hymn that we now know as "It Is Well With My Soul." He writes, "When peace like a river attendeth my way, when sorrows like sea billows roll, whatever my lot, you have taught me to say, it is well with my soul." How is it that a man could lose literally everything that he has, yet still have so much peace, have so much faith? How is it that you could lose everything, yet still be so alive? It's because Horatio had a relationship with Jesus. You can lose everything, but if you still have Jesus, you have everything you need. 2 Corinthians chapter 12, verse 9 and 10 says, "But he said to me, my grace is sufficient for you, for my power is made perfect in weakness. Therefore, I will boast all the more gladly my weaknesses so that Christ's power may rest on me. That is why, for Christ's sake, I will delight in weaknesses, in insults, in hardships, in persecutions, in difficulties. For when I am weak, then I am strong." Not only will you be able to walk on water when you're occupied with Jesus, but when you fall down and you lose everything, He'll be right there to pick you back up again. And I want to take a moment here in service, and we're going to worship God, but I want to do it a little differently than we normally do. I'm not going to ask you to stand up. I'm not going to ask you to lift your hands and do all of that. I'm simply going to ask that as John Fulton is singing this song, that you pay attention and you listen to the lyrics of this song, and that you listen and you allow God to speak to your soul tonight. That God would encourage you. What is it? What is that thing in your life that is causing you not to step over the boat and just follow Jesus and walk on water? What is that risk that you need to take that's going to allow you to fulfill the God-given dream, the God-given destiny in your heart? Some of you guys may not even have a relationship with Jesus. You may have heard about Him. You may know about Him. You may have grew up in church, but for whatever reason, you never made that decision that I want to be occupied with Jesus. I want to have a relationship with Jesus that will cause me to do miracles, that will cause me to walk on water, that will cause me to look back on my life and say, people will say, man, this was a man of faith. He risked everything he had. He did everything he could. And I'm going to give you an opportunity to do that. But in this first moment here, just stay seated. If you feel compelled, you're more than welcome to stand up and worship. But you can just let God speak to you in this moment. Let Him break the chains in your life that are holding you back. Whatever it is that you might be struggling with, that divorce, that breakup, that debt, that loss of a job, the heartbreak, whatever it is, let God encourage you. Let Him speak to you so that you too can say, all is well with my soul.
Thank you for listening to the Oasis Church Podcast. To find out more about Oasis, including service times and directions, please visit our website at oasisla.org.